Well, the upheaval in the advertising world is having dramatic effects on newspapers, on television, and yes, on radio. We'll be talking about that today with Peter Fox, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Newspaper Association. He represents Wisconsin's 235 daily and weekly newspapers, talking with him about it. And hopefully we'll get your input on it, too, and your take on this whole area. What's happening here? What's going to happen to our media? The shifts in advertising and the advancement of the Internet have created really, I think, Peter, welcome, by the way. Thank you for being with us today. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Good to be here, Larry.
Really, the shifts in advertising and the advancement of the Internet have really created a new environment for all the what we'd call the traditional media, radio, TV, and newspapers.
That's correct. And, you know, in my job, I deal with a lot of reporters and a lot of civic groups, and the questions that I receive all are related to newspapers. Quite obviously, newspapers are very personal. A newspaper reflects the personality of a given community. But so I get questions on paywalls, on what's happening. Will my newspaper be here tomorrow? And all these different questions. And it strikes me that there's a much bigger aspect to this, and newspapers are just one part of this complex social shift that we're having. And because newspapers, broadcast television, cable television, news magazines, radio, all the traditional news gathering entities are really dependent upon advertising continuing their operations. So as I have been answering those questions and talking with folks, realizing more and more that the issue is not why is my newspaper as it is, or why is my Time magazine as it is, or are there more commercials on television or what have you. Let's stand back and take a look at this whole societal change that is having a dramatic impact on our daily lives.
Well, let's take a look back. What's happened?
Well, traditionally, let's talk about newspapers for a while. Traditionally, newspapers have had their revenue stream has been in two parts, anywhere from two-thirds advertising revenue and one-third circulation revenue to maybe three-quarters advertising revenue and one-quarter circulation, and some combination thereof. Okay. Well, with the advent of the Internet, we have seen all bets off when it comes to advertising. And as a result, not only with the economic downturn, which really began in 2001 with 9/11 and carried through to 2007 and 2008, we've seen some shifts in societal norms, but we've also seen some dramatic shifts in how people communicate and target their messaging. Today, I'm just looking at some statistics. In the first half of 2009, if you look at television, that advertising revenue is off 10%. Magazine revenue is off 21%. Oh, yeah. This is advertising. Newspaper advertising revenue is off 24%, and radio is off in the same category. So when the money that comes in to sustain your news gathering operations decreases, what do you do?
Yeah. Well, you have to do is cut back on people.
Exactly. And for newspapers or for a television station, you cut back on your operations, the press room, mechanical issues. And unfortunately, you've got to cut back on the people who gather the news, the reporters and the editors. There's a big discussion about, well, gee whiz, all the news is free on the Internet. Well, not quite. It takes some trained journalists, and you as a journalism educator, Larry, you know this. It takes people who are working for a paycheck to to do these tasks of news gathering, editing, judgment. And I say the parallel is much like a public school teacher who believes in education but probably is not going to show up for work for free.
Right.
We don't have policemen defending our, you know, protecting ourselves for free, firemen, so on and so forth. Well, whatever occupation we're talking about, there has to be some means of compensating the people who are doing the work. So we're seeing a retrenchment in all the traditional news gathering media or entertainment media. And frankly, there's also kind of a blurring of the lines with what is news. I'm interested in the surveys that we see where do you get your news? And young people say, well, I get it from the internet and or middle-aged people, what have you. But then you break down and you say, well, what is that news? Well, we see it's the Daily Show or Comedy Central, or maybe it's the New York Times, maybe it's the Wisconsin State Journal, the Antigo Daily Journal, the New Glarus Post Messenger, what have you. So news means different things to different people.
Wow. Well, let's take a call. By the way, if you'd like to join in and weigh in on this with a question or a comment, I hope you will at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Jack in Eagle River up first here. Jack, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. You just hinted at what I was going to mention, and that is, has there been distinctions made between the small-town papers and the metro papers? For instance, up here in Eagle River, we have a paper that's a county paper, and people look in there for their own name or their own picture or people they know and all that, and people who visit up here for vacations, they look in there to see what's going on. And they're not going to get that out of the New York Times or the Chicago Tribune. So I was wondering if you thought maybe the smaller papers might flourish, maybe not flourish, but at least survive, in you know, as opposed to the big metro papers.
Jack, that's an excellent question. The Wisconsin Newspaper Association has 235 members. About 6 years ago, we had around 250. That doesn't represent a decline in newspapers. We've had some consolidations, and that's responsible for that. The only newspaper that I'm aware of in Wisconsin that has folded up was down in Orfordville, Footville, and George and Betty Stewart are in their mid-80s, and they decided it was time to just kind of cash it in. They couldn't find a buyer, so there you go. But in general, weekly newspapers, biweekly newspapers, smaller dailies are dealing with the effects of the economy just as the drugstores, the grocery stores, the car dealers are. They know their role in the community. They're proud of it. They're remaining strong. And the numbers I see from groups like National Newspaper Association suggest that community newspapers are remaining strong. Everybody's fighting the tough economy.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Jack, for calling. Appreciate it. Danica in Madison, you're next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I'd like to comment on the how sad I feel that newspapers subscriptions are declining and that the investigative reporters are disappearing. And I think that in light of the new Supreme Court decision regarding funding political campaigns, that it's going to be more difficult to get unbiased information about candidates. And I think newspapers are going to perhaps be one of the few sources in that maybe they're going to have to step up to that new plate.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know what the gentleman thinks about the role of newspapers in light of the Supreme Court decision.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Danica. Well, Peter Fox, comments?
Well, it's interesting, specifically in the Supreme Court decision, there's two sides to that particular coin. One, we have a First Amendment, and there's an ability to speak freely. The other side of that coin is the plethora of angry, nasty political ads that we which we must up put, or something like that. However, it's an interesting thing when you think about it. Newspapers represent a business corporation in some cases that have always had the ability to comment on things political. Newspapers mm-hmm. have been able to do this on the editorial page for a long time.
Sure.
Remains to be seen what the downstream effect of this is going to be. But, Danica, you raise something that concerns me. Back in 2007, the Endowment for the Arts came out with a report, To Read or Not to Read, and you can Google it or Yahoo it, whatever, and come up with it. But the upshot is, in the United States over the last number of years, there has been, and I'm reading this right now, there's been a general decline in reading among teenage and adult Americans. Most alarming, both reading ability and the habit of regular reading have greatly declined among college graduates. The implications of these declines have social, economic, cultural, and civic implications. So not only do we have an issue with newspapers being able to do investigative journalism and published investigative journalism, but we've got a challenge right now in America in how people take in news, how they critically evaluate it, and to what degree they drill down on a complex story, stay with it. And I think that this is a real challenge for our American society going forward. But as Larry, who has been an educator for a long time, I used to teach news writing. Every reporter is an investigative reporter, and that's what gathering news is all about.
And you've described a modern newspaper. I love your description of as a social mission wrapped in a business plan.
Exactly.
Maybe you could expand on that because I think it relates.
Right. Well, you know, a lot of the concern that has been expressed about newspapers, Larry, is you're not covering our community. You're not doing what you used to do. And I can tell you that wounds the hearts of every single employee in a newspaper operation. That's real personal. They feel it that way. But if it wasn't for the ability to earn revenue through circulation, through advertising, that newspaper wouldn't exist. So we do have a community mission. That's why the First Amendment's there. That's why we have the role of American newspapers in our country. We look to them. We personalize them. But without the means to continue the business, we won't be able to pursue our social mission.
Danica, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. We'll get to Clarence in just a second here, but I want to remind you, Peter Fox, our guest today, he is executive director of the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, representing Wisconsin's 235 daily and weekly papers. And talking with him today about the upheaval in the advertising world and its effect on newspapers, but also on radio and television, our traditional media. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls here as we talk about the advertising world and its effects on media, all that upheaval. Clarence and Bloomington, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Clarence. Thank you for...
Hello. I'm a senior citizen. I do not have a computer, but I have a suggestion for your guest, Peter Fox, on how to raise revenues for newspapers. It's simple, sir. Charge to publish letters to the editor comments. I send letters to editors to Wisconsin State, Telegraph Herald, and various papers. They don't get published. I'm very happy to pay to have these things published. So I'm sure you're trying to get my word out to whoever will read the papers. I don't have a computer, so I can't do it on Facebook or whatever these other gadgets are.
Well, you were breaking up a little bit there, so we're having some trouble hearing you. But, Peter, did you get the gist of this?
I think the gentleman's suggestion that that newspapers could raise some revenue by charging for letters to the editor, actually, we already do that. They're called advertisements.
Yes, you do. Well, someone else emailed Monica in Mequon, said, what's stopping newspapers from taking the route the music industry took by banding together and offer the newspaper for a fee that can be downloaded to a computer or other device?
Well, some of that is actually happening right now. Of course, the music industry woke up, as and the movie industry is too, by realizing that, that there is pirating, gross pirating of their of their of their products, and that's what happened with ASCAP and those organizations that represent the music industry. And so some newspapers are experimenting or have actually emplaced what's euphemistically called paywalls. In other words, it's sort of an internet lockbox where you put 50 cents in and get your newspaper. When the internet first arrived, I was a newspaper editor in Racine. And the thought was, well, this is a great thing because we can put more content out and entice readers to our printed product. Well, what happened was there were people who would then pick up that news content that was out, repurpose that news content, repackage it, and all of a sudden you would see it on the Yahoo splash page or something like that. In other words, the hard work of reporters and editors would be circulated and other people would gain for it. So newspapers are taking a very close look at whether for their particular newspaper they want to put a paywall that you would go to and peruse the newspaper. Now, there's a couple other manifestations. Some newspapers, several in Wisconsin, now make it possible for you to subscribe to the PDF edition of a newspaper. In other words, you will download every page as it appears in the printed edition. That's becoming quite successful around the country. It seems to be more successful in smaller communities than metropolitan communities. Reasons for that were unclear with, but newspapers do have to recapture that revenue if they're able to, if they want to pay the reporters, pay the editors, pay the pressmen, and the other people who help put it together a newspaper.
Let's turn to thanks again, Clarence. Paul in Cedarburg, on to you now. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. I agree with Danica's concern. I'm concerned about the fairness of news coverage, not just investigative reporting. But I wonder if the professor could explain why and how the First Amendment applies to corporations and not just people, ordinary citizens.
Well, I'm not a professor. I'm just a gray-haired former newspaper editor, so I'm not able to do that. And I'm not an expert in that particular legal aspect, but I'm at a loss on that one, sir. I'm at a loss.
All right. Well, we'll take some more calls here. And Paul, that's a question for another topic. Actually, we could do another show just on that.
That's a terrific idea.
And I think we will do that. As a matter of fact. So thanks for that comment. I'm recording it in my brain here, and we'll see if we can come up with another show down the road to deal with that. Doug in McQuantigo, we'll turn to you. Hi, Doug. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I was just wondering if you guys could comment on bias in the media and whether that has any effect on people's need or want to purchase the product. I mean, I am of the opinion, I mean, I'm 46 years old. I still like a paper. I don't like to have to crack out my computer to read the newspaper. I still like a newspaper, and I just feel that people who read newspapers are going to trend to be a little bit older, a little wiser, and have a little better ability to read between the lines and see someone's political bent by how they title an article. I can usually tell pretty quick that person's political feelings on the article they're writing within the first paragraph or two. And, you know, if you are producing a product that someone can't believe in as far as giving me the unbiased news, I can't buy it anymore. And I feel that I don't think that I'm that unique. There has to be other people out there who think like I do.
First of all, God bless you for reading newspapers. Let me say that. bias is something that trained journalists, whether they're broadcast, print, they deal with every day. We're human beings, and as we approach a story, there's probably something about that story that's going to cause us to say, what's the angle on this? How are we going to cover it? I think that one of the things that we have seen in American journalism over the decades is that there are standards of ethics. They're not mandatory. There is a substantial training in journalism schools. There's continuing professional discussion. I used to tell my staff when I was in the newsroom that we gain readers by publishing good newspapers day after day after day, but we lose readers with one single story, and we need to keep that in mind. I'm very concerned about the blogosphere, where anybody who has a keyboard can opine. I think a lot of bloggers hold very deeply held views. They feel they're correct. They feel they're accurate. But and I believe in a marketplace of ideas. But I am concerned with how the internet has just created an explosion of bias. Frankly,
yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, with your question or comment at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Just to go along a little bit with what Doug was talking about in terms of biases and so forth, one of the things that I think we're seeing in television and probably newspapers and radio as well, is that there are several services that are starting up to sort of supply news, and you see it on television. Sometimes during a newscast, there may be a feature piece that actually wasn't prepared by the local reporters, but came from some national organization that may or may not have a sort of a point of view that they want to get across.
That's correct. There's a lot of concern in journalism circles about that, and I think it's particularly a concern for television producers.
Yeah.
I don't see this happening with newspapers so much, and I don't think it occurs with radios. But you know what's happening? Getting back to this foundation of advertising, Larry, and how it is important. What is happening is that major advertisers are saying, I don't want to advertise in newspapers anymore. I don't want to advertise on television. Television is segmented. And as a matter of fact, there's great concern that broadcast TV, over-the-air TV, is in trouble because it's being dissected by cable and all the specialty cable channels. And so what's happening with advertisers is they're saying, I'm going to shift my money to the internet because I can target the people that I want to reach. And we're seeing places like banks, insurance companies, retailers developing their own in-house websites, very sophisticated, their own email programs that go to customers. And so they're pulling in their total advertising budget. It might be remaining the same, but what they're doing is that they're putting more and more into in-house activity. And so there's going to be a strain on every one of our traditional news gathering media, that's going to have some consequences.
Let's turn to Bob in Green Bay next. Bob, hello to you.
Hi. One of your most faithful readers of the newspaper are old people, And yet you keep making the print smaller and smaller and smaller, that it's almost impossible to read even with glasses.
Well, I'm sitting here with my reading glasses on, looking at my notes. Yes, there was a period of time when type sizes were reduced. I know many newspapers have looked at different fonts, which is the typeface itself, trying to find the most readable font at a particular size. I don't think we'll see that reduction anymore. I hope that's good news to you. The width of newspapers has been narrowed as a cost-saving measure because of the just wildly erratic price of newsprint. That's another factor. But I don't think we're going to see decreased type sizes. But throughout American newspapering, that older demographic has always been a very loyal segment of readership. But WNA, Wisconsin Newspaper Association, recently completed a survey of Wisconsin households. I'm just looking over the data coming in right now. And I'm happy to say that across the state, newspapers of various size, we're seeing that 83% of the Wisconsin adult population is looking at newspapers on a weekly basis. And I'm seeing some encouraging signs that rather than an erosion of younger readers, it's holding. But you're absolutely right that our strongest demographics tend to be 40, 45 years and older.
83, 84%, that's a pretty high percentage.
It is. And actually, Larry, it tracks across the United States. A lot of attention has been focused on the larger daily newspapers, the metropolitan newspapers, and the issues that they're dealing with. A lot of those issues have to do with debt load, the cost to maintain old organizations and payroll costs, health insurance costs, all those sorts of things. But also factoring into those metropolitan issues are changed lifestyles, locked apartment buildings, a 24-hour lifestyle that America now has. So it is incorrect, it is erroneous to presume that people are saying newspapers just don't matter in my life. That's not the case. It's the equation is more complicated than that. Sometimes they just simply have trouble getting to them in metropolitan areas, and sometimes those metropolitan newspapers are just having a hard time keeping the numbers going, particularly when so much depends on advertising revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Bob, for calling. Jim in Galena, Illinois, will turn to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. For your guest, I read several newspapers, a local newspaper, the USA Today, and I picked up New York at a period different time. My biggest concern is the reporters, the newspaper reporters and so-called professional reporters want to be protected, and I understand that, by not giving out their sources. But for the last 8 or 10 years, both political parties, and particularly with Cheney, and I'm an independent voter, I got to say that, but they used the reporters to plant a story that was false, untrue, and then they'd get on the talk shows and talk about it on Sundays, that about a particular story, and particularly the New York Times about the Valerie plane and about Iraq and certain other things. How do we stop that in the future? How do we stop a Democratic Party or a Republican Party for picking certain reporters that are well-known, well-established, plant a story that's not true or untrue, and then the reporter goes ahead and prints it, and some months later they get called into court and they don't have to testify or don't have to say who's giving them their information? That I'm concerned about.
All right, Peter.
Well, that's kind of a complex question. We always have, and I can, you know, I used to cover Capital News here in Madison. There's always someone looking to plant a story. And actually, for that matter, in the business community and you name it, there's always someone looking to plant a story. And it takes I've been fooled a couple times in my career. I'll say that. I don't know of any reporter or editor who wants to do a bad job. I don't know any reporter or editor, broadcast or print, who wants to publish or broadcast a story that's erroneous. Sometimes it does happen. The issue with confidential sources and protection of sources is very important. As a matter of fact, here in Wisconsin, State Representative Joe Parisi has sponsored a Whistleblower Protection Act. And I hope it becomes law. It's before the state senate right now. It's passed state assembly. This would it's not designed to really. It's not designed, in my mind, as a reporter's shield. It's reporters are simply, as you point out correctly, are the conduit through which information proceeds. If we didn't have reporters and editors who were willing to protect confidential sources, we wouldn't have found out about the full detail of the Nixon White House. That's a good example. Frankly, we wouldn't have found out about the abuses at Walter Reed Hospital either, and I can go on like that. I think there are times when the public is irked that the attention is going to the reporter or the editor, but really those that the federal and state protections are really meant so that citizens have an ability to blow the whistle on waste, fraud, and abuse in government. It's not always pretty. Sometimes interests become mixed, but I think overall those type of predictions, whether they're by statute or by common law, I think they benefit our democracy.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that comment, Jim. Appreciate it. I want to give Ross a chance to get on as well. Ross from Lansing, Iowa, up next. Thank you for calling. Hello.
Hello. I'm an old newspaper survivor. Worked for INS and Mr. Hearst. And Mr. McCormick, Tribune. Both, one on the news side for Hearst and the advertising side for the Tribune. And the idea that newspapers are going downhill is because the expenses are going up. And the somebody mentioned how much a paper cost. Back in the 60s, Sunday Chicago Tribune had about $4.50 worth of newsprint with nothing on it, just the paper. And they owned the paper mills. They owned the timber, I said. Six stands of timber up in Canada, 100 miles deep. They manufactured their own paper. They had the ships to ship it in from through the lakes, and all the papers. There were 33 subsidiaries. And up in Calumet, Wisconsin, in those days, the Chicago Tribune had 98% of the circulation. Now, Calumet isn't very big, but distribution throughout the metropolitan area, which you have to include, you know, from a big city like Chicago, all the way over to south of West Michigan, the whole top of Indiana. And I always thought of the Milwaukee Journal and the Sentinel as sort of neighborhood newspapers because we covered that area that much too. Now, since the owners have changed, the attitude changed, the Tribune sold off a lot of its land for shipping the newsprint in, built a new big publishing offset presses, got rid of everything else, and they slid right down the pipe.
No. Comments? Thanks for calling, Ross. Comments, Peter?
Well, first of all, Larry, I want to commend you on having a national radio program. this is not just Wisconsin,
but
it's Illinois, Iowa. Way to go. That was true in those years. Newspapers were more involved directly in the newsprint and acquisition, those types of things. It's a changed world now.
Yeah, it surely is. It's a lot different, but it's fun to hear, to get that perspective. I didn't know that about the Chicago Tribune and its ownership of land.
Well, as a matter of fact, Wisconsin Newspaper Association owns a press forest. In Eagle River that's utilized by the Trees for Tomorrow educational facility. And back in the 50s, our publishers and editors it was an old potato field. Now it's this beautiful forest. They went up and they transformed this old potato field into an outdoor education laboratory that's used by tens of thousands of Wisconsinites today.
Oh. Thank you, Ross. James in Denmark, we'll go to you. Hi.
Jane? Yeah, good morning. I would like to kind of bring us back to a local thinking. I'm fortunate out of Denmark to have the Denmark Press, but I'm also associated with another paper, the Wrightstown Spirit. I don't read the Green Bay Press Gazette because it doesn't have the kind of local information that I need. One of the things about these two papers, and I'm sure there's dozens and dozens and dozens of them across the state, is that they publish the meeting notes of the town boards. They give us the utility notations. They give us substance, which I think most of us really are looking for. The Wrightstown Spirit is a free paper that's delivered in my mailbox. So apparently advertisers think it's a valuable source of information. Can you tell, so when we're talking about these big papers folding, apparently these other papers are at least making it, but they're giving us very, very good substantive information. And I just want to hear your
comments.
Speak about that.
Right. Well, those community newspapers, that's the strength they have, is they're able to focus on the community. And you're absolutely right about the Denmark Press, and I'm aware of the Wrightstown paper as well. And the most expensive kind of news gathering is that local news gathering. That's involves a reporter, going out and capturing that information, bringing back to the newsroom. Very, very important. And also in those smaller communities, there's a very strong relationship between local government and the citizens and the newspaper. So that's a strength of journalism in our country. The free newspapers, there is an association, Wisconsin Community Newspapers. They do have a strong presence. They're valuable for Wisconsin. More often than probably almost totally, they have no news gathering staff, but they do publish things that are presented to them. And there's a role for that, and it's a good thing. As you move up in a metropolitan area to a larger newspaper with a wider regional coverage, the threshold for news also becomes elevated. It's more difficult for a regional newspaper to cover all the things that a weekly newspaper might cover. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel does not cover the same type of news as the Oak Creek Press. The Wisconsin State Journal doesn't cover the same thing that the Verona Press does. That's kind of a function of a size of a newspaper. And editors and publishers are forever doing readership surveys, particularly the daily newspapers. They have the resources to do that. Say, are we covering the right things? Are we doing the right things? I can tell you that the wonderful thing about readership surveys is our readers continue to say, we want more, and that's a good thing.
And with that, we have to conclude. Peter, I hope you'll come back and be with us again. We didn't cover all I wanted to cover anyway.
Well, delightful, Larry. Great to be here. Great to see you again, and I'd love to be back.
Peter Fox is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Newspaper Association, as we talked with him about, well, really, the advertising world and its effect on media. We zeroed in a bit more on newspapers, but radio and TV are in the same boat. And I'm sure it's worth another program. We'll do something to follow up on this. But we're going to switch gear and talk with you next. There's a great new book out. It's called People of the Sturgeon, Wisconsin's Love Affair with an Ancient Fish. And we'll talk with Ron Brook, who's one of the co-authors of People of the Sturgeon, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.